It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so a lot of things happened this week in the world and in the news, and some of them gave me a little hope, and most of them did not, and made me sad to be a human. But the big point is I don't want to talk about any of those.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about how someday I'm going to get my boss fired.
Why would you do that?
Not on purpose.
Well, if you know ahead of time, maybe you can avoid doing it.
You would
accident.
Think so, and yet no. Here's the thing. My boss trusts me.
What? What?
And that's just a terrible idea. No, my boss trusts me and respects my opinion. My boss frequently discusses things with me before she does them in the terms of frequently involves meeting clients, presenting things like that when she has to go and talk to a state government or sometimes a different country.
Sure.
And talks about the kind of stuff she's going to present and things like that. And I give her advice, and she runs a lot of them by me. And I have a lot to say on this. I have some very serious opinions, and they sometimes involve, like, with these people, this is what they're going to be expecting.
Sure.
This is the kind of thing you say. They will react negatively to this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to focus on this kind of thing.
And for the record, I've been your manager before.
Yes.
And I did trust you.
Yes.
And this is the kind of thing I would ask your opinion about also.
And I am willing to not do some false modesty here or anything, and think I'm pretty good at this stuff.
I would guess so. I would guess so.
Nevertheless, I'm making this shit up.
Well, but as someone who has an anthropological imagination...
Yeah, but I'm really, like, every once in a while it really hits me when, like, I'm really confident. I'm like, they're going to... And I'm like, I have no idea what people from literally the education department of Kosovo are going to be thinking. Like, how would I possibly know that? But I'm still like, you know, they're going to... If you come at them this way, they're going to feel patronized. But if you do this... And I'm just like, one of these days... Because she to date, she's never been like, you know what? I think you're way off base on that one.
Okay.
And also to date, it's never been bad. She's never come back and like, you fucked me, Parsons.
But when I was studying...
But I keep thinking, one of these days, something I told her is just going to blow up in her face so bad.
When I was studying sociology, one concept that came up over and over again was something they called the sociological imagination. And what that means is that when you're trained... to be a sociologist, and it's probably true for physics and every other scientific discipline too, you start to see things through that lens. Now, you're trained as an anthropologist, so you think in the way an anthropologist does, and not everybody thinks like that. So you can apply that mode of thinking and that frame to even to situations that you've never been instructed on, you've never studied, but you know, you can piece some things together and make some good educated guesses
mm-hmm.
that apparently are working out well.
And that I just figure eventually her luck's going to run out.
Well,
or my luck's going to run out.
That's possible.
Look at it.
That's possible.
I'm like, it can't be good all... Because, yeah, just sometimes I'm just like, wow. I mean, I sort of get how I got there. But I kind of pulled that out of my butt. And she was just like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, I still don't think it's wrong. But I'm a little wondering why any of us are trusting me on this. But, yeah, I mean, I haven't... As far as I know, I have not steered her wrong yet.
Well, it's
so
probably
because good.
You didn't just study anthropology in college. You've been an anthropologist ever
since.
No,
you and I both got undergrad degrees that did nothing useful for us occupationally.
That's right.
But that pretty much have determined our life views going forward.
That's exactly right. However, what you're proving, though, is that the fact that your degree didn't really do anything for you professionally... is less about how useless your degree was and more about how people don't understand how useful your degree is, because now your boss is making use of it right now.
Or, to argue in another way, more about my interpretation of what my degree... Because one could say, if my boss is finding value in things that I'm doing that theoretically could be tied back to my degree, that my degree is helping me out occupationally.
That's true. That is true. You're right about that. You're right.
Although I didn't get hired for that. I got hired for my ability to recreate a spreadsheet.
Right, and what I mean is that expertise of yours is so valuable. I would think that would be a job that businesses would hire someone specifically for that.
Yeah, once I get in my foot in the door, I can usually prove myself pretty well. I'm a bad interviewer, and I have a lot of skills that are not super easily quantifiable.
Yeah.
When I tell people I'm funny, I don't say that anymore in an interview, but I used to say it in an interview. And that sounds, on the surface, really dumb, but like when I've worked to a place for a while and I bring that up, they're like, no, that's really a big deal. Because it's a morale-based thing, sure. And it's a, you know, just everybody surviving through the workday kind of thing. And
but also can diffuse a situation that is tense, perhaps.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the day where I'm like, yeah, no. She comes back, she's like, you were so wrong about that. They are so mad at us now.
Of course, anyone can be wrong sometimes. But you are very good at it. So I doubt that's going to happen, or if you are wrong, it's going to be so
well,
wrong.
Well, and it feels good. I find, like, I at no point do I feel like it's lip service.
Right.
There was, especially in the early days, because a lot of, you know, you talk with people and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, you know, she's just trying to make me feel involved or whatever. And she and I are like friends, sort of not involving work. And so there's this like, you know, of course she just, but over time, well, to the degree that there have been times where she has referred other people to me for a similar thing.
Yeah.
And it does make me feel like there's something useful. But just every once in a while, I'm just like, we might be putting too many eggs in this basket.
Well, that might happen. But
hello, everyone, and my boss, who's absolutely listening. It's a fun game now to like picture what her face looks like during different parts.
Right.
Mostly tomorrow morning, she's gonna come and tell me things. She never writes on the blog, but almost every Friday, she's like, "Can you come in for a minute?" And she has like things to say about the podcast. Mm. Hello, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that we do entirely in Pig Latin and then put it on the internet backwards. Eh? Think about it. But don't think about it too long, because it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. I am Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 394.
No, that doesn't mean anything. For a second, I was really excited, but that's not a thing. Somebody was just saying the other day, Trish told me she had read, somebody said, maybe on Reddit, I don't know, that Guam, Puerto Rico, and I think American Samoa should be made states, and then we'll have 53 states, which is a prime number, and then we really will be one nation indivisible.
Not bad.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Not bad.
For those of you just joining us, here's how this works. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, sexy people, wonderful people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show, except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it. Working on doing that faster.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was fast.
I like to sometimes pretend I'm the Micro Machines guy.
The Micro Machines? What?
Do you not remember the Micro Machines guy?
No.
Do you remember Micro Machines?
I mean, I knew kids that had them,
I guess. Yes, the little toys. Just tiny, tiny, tiny cars.
It must have been after my time.
And their entire campaign was this guy who quite famously, he's been in movies and stuff too, or can talk.
The fast-talking guy.
He's been
in lots of commercials.
Yeah. But
I think he was in a Wendy's
commercial. If you're at the right age group like me, you remember him as the Micro Machines guy, because that was his big deal. So how's your week been?
That was fine. We saw The Nun in theaters.
This is another one of those where my first question is not, oh, did you like? My first question is, why?
Oh, you know, we're into the Conjuring series in general.
Okay, how did you feel about The Nun?
It
was just an American remake of the German film Das Nun. Except in German it's pronounced Das Nun.
It was a pretty weak entry in the series, for sure. Mm. It was fine. We could have waited and seen it, rented it or streamed it or something, and it probably would have felt like, we got our money's worth.
Yeah.
Although we saw it on a Tuesday night where it's just like discounted and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't pay a lot for it anyway, and that there was like four other people in the theater. And I wonder if that would have made a difference if other people were there and you could hear people's responses to things.
I never have watched horror movies in a theater because I still can't really cope with that. So I don't know.
Well, it
except one time they made me watch Alien for the first time ever in the Bijou.
Oh.
And so that was a little bit scary. So I didn't really pay attention to the crowd.
Well, we like the series, and there are several films we like in the series. So we might end up, like, owning it just as a matter of, when we sit down to watch order or something, we'll watch it.
Well, and presumably they'll make a box set or whatever.
Yeah, right. And not only that,
finally squeezed all the money out of it.
But it's not like it was horrible or something. It's in the same universe. It had some things about these films that we like. This nun character has been in other films.
Conjuring movies, I don't particularly care about enough. To me, they fall. I don't know if they actually are PG-13 horror, but they fall into that category for me.
Mm.
Where I'm like, I don't care. I want to know the story, but I don't care enough to watch the thing. So I've read all the synopses for these, and I did it on The Nun 2. And I will say this. It seems, based on the stories, way better than either the goddamn Annabelle movies. So, at least
well,
there's
see,
that.
I liked the Annabelle movies, so.
I feel even better then.
I
have a thing. I like horror movies largely for their mythology. Sometimes I think I've talked about, for certain transgressive elements. Sometimes you can find things in horror movie that you won't find in a mainstream movie until decades later. But frequently it's for the mythology in it.
Yeah,
and
me
the story
too.
Behind it.
Me too.
And the Conjuring ones are interesting. They are not particularly original, in my opinion.
Right.
And I can't get away from the goddamn Beatties.
Warrens.
The Warrens, sorry.
Warren Beatty.
That was my problem. That's pretty cute.
The Warrens.
I'm just funny when I'm not even trying. The Beatties. Because I firmly believe. Here's the thing. I believe that in the realm of possibility, there are only two things they could be. Con artists or complete lunatics.
Right, one of those two things, for sure.
And I don't feel like they're complete lunatics, so I'm pretty sure they're con artists.
All right, well,
I should say were. One of them's dead.
Yeah,
but
one of them's dead.
And just, I feel like all the loathing I have for the Long Island medium, with the added thing that they scare the shit out of people on purpose, like, and so it's weird. I mean, and all of this is, loosely inspired by kind of stuff. I don't think they're seeing any money from it or anything, but like, I'm always like, oh, and then those shitty people show up. All right, great.
That I don't worry about any of that. I just thought the original was pretty good, and I like the Annabelle ones. And the second one wasn't bad. It just, the interesting stuff kept getting interrupted by, in the second one, they tried to, like, little pieces of the film would have something like just between the Warrens or featuring one of them, like, to...
Yeah, that the second one seemed to do a lot of, like, making them into heroes.
Yeah, something, yeah.
Flashbacks
and it was totally interrupting the flow, and it's like, don't do that. It was interesting, and then you stopped it to show Ed Warren playing guitar and singing some Elvis song. It was just dumb.
I will say, the Conjuring movie, one of the things that does specifically bug me about the Conjuring movies is it makes a lot of creatures that it doesn't explain. They just look weird, and people on the internet have to give them names and stuff. And so I was pleased to find out that the Freaky Nun was getting a history.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing. The Conjuring made some amazing creatures visually.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's, I don't care what happens to this damn family. I want to know where the red lipstick demon came from or whatever. I'm like, what the fuck?
Right.
What unholy rituals spawned that thing? Right, I don't care if Ethan Hawke saves his son. Like, I know. I want to know what little child accidentally called up the devil while they were playing with their Legos and made that thing.
And I liked the story in, like you were saying, the mythology, the lore of it was really good. It just wasn't executed very, mostly the script just wasn't very good, which was really strange. Why? I don't know why that was. I'm not sure that the Farmiga girl, Vera's sister, I always forget her name, it starts with a T.
Tessa or something.
And she, I don't think she was as a strong enough actor to really carry that role, probably. But I mean, you know, like I said, we'll probably see it again. It wasn't terrible. It just wasn't as good as some of the other ones.
Yeah.
And we bought Solo and watched it the other night and liked it just as much as good. The first time.
Yeah.
But what I forgot to mention last week was my wife's been playing Tomb Raider, the new Tomb Raider game.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good, except the background story is, I don't know. So it takes place mostly in South America.
All right.
But somehow in part of the story, some Mayan people have migrated to Peru.
Like you do.
But it's all done in a way where she's finding Mayan artifacts, Aztec artifacts, and Peruvian artifacts. So the good side of it is, you're learning a lot about all of these cultures. The bad side of it is the story they've put together to justify that is really thin.
Yeah.
And it, on one hand, you think they're thinking, oh, this is going to be a great celebration of Mexican and Central American and South American culture. But you're kind of undercutting that by trying to smash them all together and talk about them all at once instead of just focusing on one.
It's because Tomb Raider is pulp, and pulp has never respected other cultures. It's amazing they've bothered to, like, it's a step in the right direction that they've bothered to make a distinction.
I suppose.
Like, Indiana Jones never fucking bothered. Kaliba! Kaliba!
But the portrayal of the character, the direction the character has gone, Lara Croft's character, is very interesting. It's fun to be playing the game again. And she's at a point now where a lot of things feel like the classic games,
okay,
except in a good way, not in a bad way or an exploitive way. So
but in terms of a character arc in the same place.
Well, yeah, she's kind of got a bad attitude, but you know how she got there.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, and it there's a lot of pathos, I guess, there. So it's really been fun to play and watch. I just wish they underlying story was stronger, because the last two games had good underlying stories. I don't know why they didn't seem to do as well on this, but anyway, so she's playing that and having a good time playing that. But that's it, I think, just those two movies and Tomb Raider.
I also saw a movie.
What'd you see?
Well, actually, I want to say first, I had finished Altered Carbon.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah, you were watching that.
I'm less certain about my recommendation now.
Oh.
I think
there was only like three shows left.
There were two, and they were dark as fuck.
Oh, okay.
And the funny thing is, I'm like, it's because they really deviated from the book here, blah, 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 blah. And then I looked it up. No.
This is
pretty much what happened in the book.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't remember. They went, like, they used analogous characters. So, like, there's a character that's a major part of the TV show that did not exist in the book. But there's a different character that's not in the TV show that's in the book that pretty much did the same things.
Oh,
so it's a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think it's maybe just me. I mean, like, it's some dark stuff, but if you're watching things like Westworld and stuff like that, if you're watching Bates Motel and things, like, it's probably fine. And I'm not sorry I watched it. It is getting a second season. I probably will at least start to watch that. But yeah, it threw me. When I finished that last one, I was like, whoa. For a while afterwards, I was like, this is heavy. And the changes, the messaging changes because it's updated to the present instead were interesting and creepy for being interesting. And Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. But yeah, I mean, watch out. It's a dark show. But I mean, I guess I still recommend it. Also finished Final Space. I don't know that I can recommend that. I'm kind of pissed off. That was the animated comedy one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did not so much reach a conclusion.
Mm.
The entire show, every episode, is at a point in the future where our hero is stuck in space amongst debris and going to die soon, running out of oxygen.
Mm.
Every episode starts with this, and he's counting down a little more.
Mm-hmm.
The show ends with you getting back to that point, and that's it.
Mm.
Like, you know, this is not a new device. Like, no. there's a thing in the future, and then you keep flashing back to how you got there, and then you get there, and then the final act is what happens from there.
Yeah, right.
No, we're just there. And I'm not going to say it was a terrible ride, but we didn't get any resolution. It is getting a second season, so,
oh, okay.
You know, maybe. But I am disappointed. I still recommend the show as much as I did before, but I say it is not a complete arc. It does not resolve, so be prepared for that fact. Started the Dresden Files game.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
Good.
Good.
Good. It's going about what I expected, including the parts where I expected things to not go the way I expected.
Yeah.
One of my players is getting very much into their character, which is fun. One of my players is just, I think, so excited to be playing that it's a little much.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do everything, and they come up with every idea, and they second and third guess every situation. That I'm just like, just go through the door, come on. And one of my characters got bit in the face by a venomous thing that's kind of like a snake, but not a snake. They know that based on the bite marks, but they don't know what the fuck it is.
Because
It was in the dark, and then they ran away. So, that's weird.
Yeah.
But, no, I think that's going to go well. No, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about a movie that I saw. Last night, Trisha's date night, she had me watch this. She's talked about this before. I knew this movie existed. I think I had it recommended to me before. I had never seen it. It is a mid-90s film called The Last Supper. Have you heard of this film?
It sounds really familiar.
It was it kind of got a cult thing going because it was this indie film. And, yeah, it was very much a period of time. It is basically... The premise is hijinks. There's a group of five grad students somewhere in Iowa. We were actually debating this because, based on the nearness to certain landmarks, they're near the Nebraska border. But then at one point, they talk about the Hawkeyes, and it's very confusing. But anyway, five liberal grad students are living in a house together. Due to some weird hijinks, they accidentally kill a stranger at dinner. But the stranger is a shitty, shitty person. And from this, they get the idea that this could be a thing they do, where they invite people they know to have horrible, basically right-wing opinions on things, and they sit down to dinner and discuss with them, and if at the end they cannot get the person to change their mind, they have them drink poison wine and kill them. And it's sort of a comedy. Like, the whole thing has a very silly aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a heck of a montage of all these people espousing these horrible opinions about things. And weird people. Jason Alexander is one of the people in there who gets, like, a two-minute scene. Mark Harmon plays the misogynist rape apologist in it. It's very weird in that respect. The five people, it is important to know, one of them is a quite young Cameron Diaz, and one of them is a surprisingly young Courtney B. Vance, who is the reason to watch this movie. He has such a crazy role, and he chews the fuck out of the scenery, and it's brilliant. It's very much a movie of its time. It's a very mid-90s film. And its political position is very mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
In the background of it, like on TV periodically is Ron Perlman playing what is clearly a Rush Limbaugh analog, and like he just says little snippets of that kind of stuff. It's also weird to see Ron Perlman doing that because it's one of the rare times where it's just Ron Perlman looking like a normal human being. So that was weird, but it is very well performed. I'm really conflicted. I have trouble figuring out if I just barely like this movie or I just barely don't like this movie. Mm. I know in the mid-90s I would have loved it, and especially because I would have been a liberal kid in college.
Mm.
Trish, in particular, was a liberal grad student when this came out, so it really spoke to her. Kind of like I think how when I first saw Garden State, I really liked it, even though other people didn't.
Mm.
And I think part of it was because I was the age of that character when that movie came out, and I saw it.
Yeah.
So I related far too well. It's horribly directed. And that's a thing. Directing has to be really amazing or really terrible in a very clear way for me to even be able to identify that that's the thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is horribly directed. It, as I told Trish that night, it has the pacing of a drunken water buffalo. We start new scenes while we're still on the same shot and in the same place. And I'm like, wait, did we just resolve that conversation? What is happening?
Yeah, that's not how you do it.
Poorly handled montages in places. A lot of things just don't hit the beats right.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that came off as casual, and that really was not. Or other things where I'm like, this is the grandiose one. It has some definite funny bits in it. It has a definite sort of message, which I think is interesting. I think it passes time. This would have been a fascinating critique of the political system in the mid-90s.
Mm.
We've grown past... Not only is it a different political spectrum now, but to me this seemed like a very simplified... I'm like, this is old. We've covered this before.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell if I recommend it or not. It's a hell of a 90s artifact, though. And it's really fun to see really young... Cameron Diaz, I've always am lukewarm on. And I especially think in her early years, she was frequently terribly cast. Because she generally was cast just for being pretty.
Mm.
And if anybody tried to put her anything in anything that had any more meat to it, she was terrible. In this, they've cast her perfectly. Like, she's... It's difficult to describe, but she's a character that I'm like, I believe... This is early 20s Cameron Diaz. Mm, and, like, mm-hmm. it fits, and she does a great job. And, like I said, watching Courtney B. Vance, especially because Courtney B. Vance has gone on to do a lot more sort of prestigious performances, in my opinion.
Okay.
I'm
not sure who that is, actually.
He is... Oh, it's hard to play. The easiest way I can place him lately is he played... in American Crime Story, he played... Oh, I keep losing this guy's name. If the glove fits, you must acquit. Famous lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
He played him. And if you look him up, he's in a lot of things. Fairly deep-voiced black man. And he does a great job in this. And it's just... I'm like, it must have been really fun to play that role. And it's not like wacky crazy. If anything, it's kind of a sedate role. But he just chews into it really well. Nora Dunn is in this. Mm. Bill Paxton is in this. Which, unfortunately, while we were watching it, was when Trish had to find out he's dead, because she didn't know that.
No. I might have seen this. I don't...
And Trish is
really familiar.
Trish really liked it, and she made a good point. She's like, this was the sequel to the Brat Pack movies.
Mm.
She's like, the kids from Breakfast Club graduated, went to college, and became these people.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it tracks. It absolutely tracks. And so there is something for that. So there's an interest in it. It's not free on Amazon. It's like $3 to rent. But so I don't know. It's sticking with me. But it's in a lot of ways not sticking with me in good ways. It's a lot of like, and why was that like that? That's dumb and stuff like that. So I don't know. And the director went on to do absolute crap, including, well, the director and her husband have done a lot of movies together. Her husband plays a character in this, doesn't produce any of this or anything, but they went on to do stuff. Most recently in my book is they did last year's film, The Bye Bye Man, which is widely considered a really, really terrible and forgettable horror movie about a local legend called The Bye Bye Man. It's awful. I mean, it's so awful, I didn't see it, but yeah, it's awful. So, yeah, I don't know where to take that, but The Last Supper. I hadn't realized it was a political thing. I had heard of this movie, but I thought it was just sort of a weird, for the thrill of it, kind of. They're like, fine, bad people. No, this is very specifically about people who have, like, terrible political views.
Yeah, I think we've seen it. It's been a long time ago. I mean, not in the 90s, but...
Yeah.
The first thing movie I ever remember seeing Cameron Diaz in... Wasn't she in Mask, the first Mask movie with the...
I never saw the first Mask movie, so it's possible.
I'm pretty sure she was in it.
I only remember her... Something About Mary was the first thing I ever remember
hearing her. Oh, this is long before that, too.
And it was funny, because, like I said, Jason Alexander has a role in it. And this is 95. This is the height of Seinfeld. I'm like, what the hell? Well, I look it up. His wife is the director's sister.
Oh.
I'm like... But meanwhile, Ron Perlman, like I said, is in this. And originally it wasn't going to be him. It was going to be Bo Bridges, and it fell through. And then he got a hold of the script. Apparently he's friends with the director and told her, we will not be friends anymore if I don't get this part. He wanted it that bad. And I do think it was probably a fun part to play. But yeah, so that was weird. That's pretty much all I got, I think. I feel like there should be.
There's another show streaming on Netflix that we started watching. I don't know if we'll keep watching it, called Maniac.
Oh, I've been seeing a lot about that. I haven't watched it.
And, I mean, the two main people are, let's see.
Jonah Hill and Stone.
Emma, right? Stone. Is it Emma Stone?
Yeah.
It's interesting, I guess. It's one of those things that goes a direction that seems super interesting, and then it doesn't go the way you anticipated it was going to go, and the way it does go is less interesting. I don't know how to explain it.
No, I've been there a lot.
Like
whoa, this has some potential. Yeah. Oh, no, wait, no, it does not.
Yeah, you'll get to the second episode, and it'll end on some kind of cliffhanger, and you're like, oh, this got good. But then they'll resolve it really quickly in the next show, and that won't have anything to do with the rest of the series, and you thought... Yeah. And you were thinking, now, if they'd stuck with this for the whole show, that would have been interesting. But no, they didn't.
That's been coming up a lot. I've noticed a lot of TV shows that have done that lately. Sleepy Hollow was almost famous for it.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it shows do it all the time where they have some cliffhanger and they resolve it in the first 2 minutes. But sometimes something about the cliffhanger is really interesting, so you actually think that maybe it's something that'll carry through to the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then it doesn't.
Well, and quite frequently, they resolve it, but they resolve it in a way that it's like, that sets back to zero.
Yeah.
It's like, not only have we resolved this, but none of this will matter.
Will matter, right?
Well, and we're still, speaking of such things, we're in the midst of sixth season Elementary.
Oh, yeah.
And I still love that show. And the procedural aspect of it still sucks so bad. Like, I love... the character arcs, and things are getting very interesting, and relationships are getting very interesting, and they have a through line that's very kind of interesting this year. That was the thing. We started watching the first one, and I'm watching the opening credits, which have been the same the whole time, and I'm like, there's a name in the opening credits we did not see before. So I'm like, whoa, who is this? So I find out who that is, and going through it. But like the murder mysteries, the weekly things suck.
Wow.
They're so dumb. And the clues are so... I'm like, wow, that's a great coincidence that you stepped on that thing. We had one recently where the entire mystery was solved by the fact that we found out the victim had been frying up garlic and peppers in a pot on the stove before they were killed.
Hmm.
We found that out at the end. And suddenly that caused us to solve the whole damn thing. And the thing, I hate this, and they've been doing a lot of this... It causes the investigators and the viewers to now know who the murderer is, mm-hmm. but is insufficient to prove mm-hmm. their murder. Mm-hmm. And then we have one throwaway scene where some fortuitous random thing happens to happen that then we can catch him. Mm. And I'm always like, really? Come on. So, yeah, that's really annoying. But outside of that, it's still really, and they keep fooling me. They had some personal shit with Watson, and I was like, I am not interested in this. And they're like, oh, no, it turns out that I am. Mm. Like, they always fool me with that crap. I'm always like, this plot line's boring and unoriginal. Oh, no, I see.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I still like it, and it still infuriates me. All right, draw a thing. I feel like more happened this week. I don't know, it was a good week, but I don't remember.
Beth.
No, I'm Tony. Oh, Beth.
Is there a graceful way to stop exchanging gifts with someone you've traditionally exchanged gifts with?
Is that actually what she wrote, or has that been abridged?
No, that's it. That's it.
Beth, way to write a detailed and yet brief enough to not get digested question. Good on you. What is your take on this? Has this ever come up for you? I mean, you are famously miserly, so I don't know no, that I'm you not. Give a lot of gifts.
I'm not miserly. Well, look.
Famously.
No, I'm not.
Ebenezer.
No.
William.
Listen.
Extreme jackass billionaire.
We haven't really exchanged gifts in my family for a very long time. And we didn't get together and decide that. It just happened. I don't even know when it happened. It didn't happen gradually either. Now, it's not...
Just 1 year spontaneously everyone decided not to give gifts and didn't tell anybody? That seems...
It was more like a...
An impressive coincidence.
It was more like a Christmas... You know, like I went home... It's probably been... You know, within the last 20 years, I went home. It was Christmas time. I didn't have anything to give anybody. Nobody else showed up with anything to give anybody. And nobody said anything about it or noticed. And then, like, when I got home, I thought to myself, hey, that's kind of weird, I guess. I mean, for Christmas and nobody...
That's super weird.
What was it like for so-and-so's birthday? Oh, yeah, there weren't any gifts there either. What was like for... My birthday. No, nobody had any gifts.
What was it like for the Christmas before?
Well, I don't know if I could remember, but I seem to recall that there was just this one year where at the end of the year after Christmas, I tried to remember when the last time was that any gifts were exchanged for a birthday or Christmas or anything, and I couldn't remember. But it seemed like, and I couldn't remember.
I feel like you got programmed. I feel like... Your family sat you down and brainwashed you to be like, no, we don't give gifts.
Now, there was an exception. Here's what I think happened, now that I'm thinking about it again. Because gifts were often sent to the kids. You know, only one of out of us five kids, only one of us had his own kids. But he's always lived far away. And I think for all their Christmases and birthdays and everything... everybody would get together and ship all of their gifts all at once.
Okay.
And I think what happened was, because I live 100 miles from everybody else, I wasn't often in on that thing. But I think there was kind of a, maybe they talked about it. I don't know. But I think it was determined that, well, we won't exchange gifts. We'll just all buy gifts for the kids and ship it to them in one thing. And nobody really filled me in on that, but I noticed that nobody else was getting gifts, so I didn't get any. And so it probably only seems like it was spontaneous to me. It probably something they agreed on.
They agreed without you. Yeah,
without me, and then I just sort of caught up with them.
My brother, 1 year, spontaneously suggested that the siblings, me, him, and my sister, stop exchanging gifts. Because he thought it was kind of pointless because we all tended to get... We didn't know each other well enough in our habits or anything. And so we would get them each other stuff that didn't really matter. He was not wrong in that it had been quite a few years since he'd gotten me anything that I even understood why he got it, let alone that I liked it. give me like weird hats and stuff. I don't know. I was very upset by this.
Oh.
Specifically, I wasn't upset by the idea of not getting gifts from him. I was upset by the idea of being told not to get him gifts anymore.
Mm.
And so I believe what I said, because I believe he didn't talk to me. Like, I found out from my parents or something. And I said, you tell him he absolutely doesn't have to give me gifts anymore, and I will get him gifts. I will continue to get him gifts when I feel like it. And that's pretty much what's happened, except over the years I've sort of learned he still gives gifts to my parents, and he still did gifts with the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. Either it morphed into he still does gifts with my sister, or it morphed into he doesn't even do gifts with the children anymore. I don't know. But at a certain point, I stopped caring about that. I don't like gift holidays. I don't like the necessity of reciprocation, because I don't feel good about a gift I've given someone because I know they're going to give me a gift, so I have to give them something. I feel good about a gift I find spontaneously and think of somebody.
Sure.
Well,
in my family, that still happens. I mean, sometimes I'll go back for Christmas and someone will have gotten somebody something, but that's because they found it and it was special and it's like, I had to get this for you.
And it is not uncommon.
And there's no hard feelings about it.
For us to find something in March for somebody and we just save it until Christmas.
That's right. That happens in our family too. Or for birthdays or whatever.
Yeah. And there's some of that. In my family, we kind of don't do things. It is not uncommon for Trish and I to come up with a gift that we get everybody sometimes. Not always. But, like, every 5 years we do the cookbook.
Yeah, right, right.
And then everybody gets. My brother gets one. Everybody gets one. Whatever. And then other years, we kind of don't do much with my family. And then her family, everybody still does gifts, so we still do that. But, like, it more and more nowadays is becoming gift cards and things like that, so I don't know how long that... There's little kids, and Grammy still likes it, so we still sort of do that, but I don't know how much about that. We don't exchange gifts at Christmas or our anniversary.
You and Trish don't.
Yes. We will occasionally buy ourselves a joint gift, which usually means, like, we'll take a weekend trip or something.
Right.
For birthday at this point, we don't do a lot of gifts, usually a couple of small things. They tend to be more thoughtful, but they also tend to be in the line of something you have to open. So it's your birthday, you know, open a present.
Right.
But the truth is, we spend all our time together. We know each other really well, and we have enough money that if we want something,
we get it.
And also, we share money, so if we want something and it's not something we can afford to get, it's not like our spouse can afford to get it for us.
Right.
So we do little things, but I don't know. I find that works okay. But, unfortunately, in answer to your question, Beth, I don't think there is.
I don't think so either.
Except accidentally. Like
kind of the way it happens with us.
Yeah, for you. But that wasn't necessarily
graceful.
Graceful when they were having whatever conversation they were.
That's right.
I mean, it's graceful if you're like, let's not do this. And they're like, oh, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, right.
And they're telling the truth.
Right.
The odds on that seem small. Because even if I'm like, ultimately, this is a better idea, if somebody presents that to me at first, I'm going to be like, what? Why? And it has nothing to do with wanting stuff. It has to do, again, with my idea that gifts are supposed to be a nice thing. So you're telling me I want to stop doing this nice thing for you, and
so
have
you
stopped
stop
doing
too, yeah.
this nice thing for me? And I'm like, why? It's nice. And then I stop and I'm like, well, it is socially enforced nice, and that is dumb. But it's still, no, I don't know that there's a way to do it. You just kind of got to rip it off like a Band-Aid.
Well, and it depends on who you're talking to also. Like in my family, again, people buy things for each other all the time. Nobody is offended that they got something for that person and not for them. The person who receives the thing doesn't feel like guilty because they didn't get that person something. It's just people do it sometimes and we don't worry about it. But some people really feel bad if you give them something and they don't have something to give you. That makes them feel terrible.
And some people really feel bad if other people get stuff and they don't.
And they don't, yeah. That's right.
They're usually children, but sometimes they grow up and stay that way.
Yeah, right.
So
it's kind of tricky depending on who you're talking to.
and you gotta use their. I'll give you some advice that, much as most of the things I tell to my boss, I pulled out of my butt. I have no experience to back this up. Well, except I've had the other version. I feel like a good time to bring it up might be just after said gift exchange.
Yeah, I think I
because I feel like commonly it gets brought up right before said gift exchange.
Yeah, right.
And that just makes it extra weird.
Yeah, right.
Because then there's more suspect motives. And then, of course, there's always the problem, like, well, I already found
the
thing
for you. Yeah,
I
already bought the thing, yeah.
So I feel like it lessens the blow if you're like, here's... And I don't mean, like, immediately. Like, here's this. I'm pretty sure you won't like it because we're bad at this. Let's just stop after this. But you'd be like, here. And then, you know, like, a week later, we're like, this was really cool. But I feel like this is, you know, weird. And I'm not saying that's going to make it okay and not awkward, but... better. And here's a question. Not drawn from that. I'm asking a question. How much effort do you put into it now? Because in a lot of cases, it sucks to try and come up with something for somebody you don't know. In other cases, you know what you'll get them that'll make them happy. So why is it such a big deal that just every year you get that one thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So ask yourself, how much of a hardship is it to do this? And I think often the case is quite a bit. Because for me, for gift shopping, it's frequently difficult. But in some cases, you're going to find somebody, it's really easy. Teenagers, super easy. Because teenagers love cash. The teenage years are the perfect age for giving cash. Because it's the years when you have discovered what cash can do for you, but you have not yet discovered how to make it yourself. Or at least you are unable to make it yourself. So the teen years, just give them cash, and they will always like that better.
Yeah.
And then I know people who like, oh, you know, they love penguins. So as long as you get them a penguin thing, they're going to love it. It's not tough for me to come up with a penguin thing every year, you know? But then there's others that's like, I have no idea. I don't know. Every year I go, what is it? And I come up with something and I always feel like it was kind of sucky and they smile and nod, but I don't know that they care. Like those ones, more of a hardship. So ask yourself how difficult it is because you're not coming out of it without at least some awkwardness.
And that seems true.
I am sorry to say. All right, give me this hat.
Wow, you're going to draw something. That almost never happens.
I know, right?
Anymore.
Craziness. That's what note cards feel like. from Craig. Huh. Cacti. Awesome or amazing? I gotta go with amazing. Awesome doesn't feel right. Cacti are fascinating.
They are. But they don't fill me with awe.
No. Exactly. And I'm not super into them.
Nope, me neither.
Like, I don't need them to be around my house or something. Which I think if something was awesome, like, it's a plant, and I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I would want some or whatever. No. Cacti are amazing. It's one of those fun things. You can get this with certain like types of frequently undersea animals and stuff. It's like, it's a plant that shouldn't work, you feel like.
Well, it does. Cactus, they do exist in some pretty crazy,
And they're basically a tree.
Yeah, kind of.
But like... the needles are the leaves. And then you're like, that's weird. You're like, somebody fucked with this tree. And I mean, I understand it from an evolutionary perspective. You're holding the water in there. And so, first of all, you need the outside to hold it. And then the needles so that shit don't just eat you for your moisture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still weird.
They're shaped kind of funny, really.
I mean, it's not quite Venus flytrap weird, but it's close.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
And also, like, I love these things, like an apple. Like, we've talked before about the red delicious apple is the universal symbol for an apple. There's a universal cactus.
Yeah, there is. I don't know what kind it's called, but...
but it looks like somebody putting their hands up.
Yeah, basically.
Like, So many cartoons have done the joke where somebody stands like that and they're hiding behind the cactus because that's exactly how they have it. And I love things that are like that. That like you could like the universal symbols that they have at airports and stuff. I'm like, you could have one for cactus.
Yep. Everybody would
I don't know
what it
why,
is.
But they'd be like, cacti yet, that way.
And yet that's one species. I mean, there's so many different ones, but that's the one that people recognize. It's crazy.
Red Dead Redemption teaches you about other cacti. Yeah. Is your wife excited for the new
one? Oh, boy. She can't wait, but she'll have to finish Tomb Raider first.
Yeah. I'm not playing another. But I'm getting itchy. I haven't hardly written since last time. Mostly because I was finalizing the stuff to get the game going. And it's weird. There's only certain days of the week I can even do writing because there's so much other shit going on.
I understand that, yeah.
But I'm not playing any... I'm not starting a new video game into that, but I'm going to start Assassin's Creed Origins because in fucking, like, a week, Assassin's Creed Odyssey comes out.
Mm.
And I'm already getting excited again. So I'm like, I have to play Origins first. better catch up. So, but yeah, Red Dead looks good. You know me; I had mixed feelings about the first one.
I know.
It's, and the weird thing is, I think all the reasons your wife likes it are what I liked about it.
Yeah.
But there absolutely was a story, and I didn't really like that story.
No, she liked all of it pretty much, and she liked the Undead DLC.
Oh, see, yeah, I never played any
she
of those.
She loved that.
But you know how I am about zombies.
You go and hunt Chupacabra, and it's like just awesome. It was pretty fun. It was a pretty fun game. So she's really looking forward to it. But, you know,
I'm sure I will play it at some point.
We're not big fans of, like, we've never played the other Rockstar games. We've never played
Grand Theft Auto,
oh, yeah. Because of the horrible things we heard about it. We just didn't want to support that kind of thing. And the original Red Dead Redemption had some of those elements, but you could avoid them so easily that, you know, in her version of the game, none of that stuff happened.
Well, and it's funny because as I understand it, in many of the Grand Theft Autos, you didn't have to do those.
Well, that's
things.
Probably true, right?
Now, as the series has gone on, that's less true.
Because they really put in
Grand Theft Auto 5 had required things that were pretty fucked up.
Well, see, I'm a little afraid. She hasn't expressed this concern, but I'm a little afraid that in their second installment, they'll turn that stuff up so it'll be harder for her to avoid even knowing it's in the game. Because in Red Dead Redemption, she knew there were certain achievements for doing certain things.
Yeah.
And she just didn't do those things. So it wasn't part of her game experience.
Well, if there is such things, it's going to show up in news sources that I frequent quickly.
Oh.
And I will let you know.
I would appreciate it if you did.
Because this is how I found it. I mean, eventually, I like stuff that I don't actually play or watch. I like to research and things like that. And that's how I find out some of this. But, like, Grand Theft Auto V has a torture scene in it that you play through as the torturer.
Jeez.
And soon as that game came out, people were like, a lot of people are kind of freaked out and pissed off about this. So, yeah, if something like that happens, most likely it will show up pretty quick.
Very sad to hear the news you told me about Telltale, though. I couldn't believe it. I mean, on two counts. One, that it's closed, that's bad enough, but how they treated their workers was just
And I'm just
atrocious.
Confused because a week before, there was rumors. But that's it, like a week before. Like, it kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, didn't the article say that someone just got hired and moved clear across the country to work there and everything?
Yep.
I mean, that's just...
And you think of those games as hugely popular. And the only thing I can think of besides something hinky's going on behind the scenes is they outpaced themselves because they were riding a wave of huge success. And so maybe they just spent too much betting that was going to keep going. Because that is the thing. Is apparently the last few games, they haven't done poorly. They've just done a lot worse than what was expected.
Hmm.
So if you just, you know, put too much money and hired too many people on too many things that you, assuming it was going to be great forever, and then it dips, and you're not prepared to deal with that, maybe. But otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to me. They still had a lot of projects ongoing. They still had a lot of new stuff they had recently announced.
They might have Ponzi schemed it, though. They might have.
Yeah.
They might have funded certain projects with with what projecting what they were going to make on future projects. Yep. You just can't do that. And before they knew it, they realized we did this all wrong, and they didn't have any money to give people severance packages. Although I say that, and what kind of money are the top people getting?
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't feel right. And also, just from what we've heard of how things were announced and what was said, it all seems pretty dickish.
Yeah.
And in fact, literally, when the outcry originally happened that they were giving nobody severance, their response to the press was slightly more politic, but essentially meaning, we're not giving severance because legally we don't have to.
Yeah, right. We don't have to.
And I'm like, dude, I could be better PR for that. You could at least pull up a sob story of like, oh, we really wish we could, and oh, it's just not feasible that... Like, no, at that point you're saying, we don't care.
we enjoyed both Batman games. We didn't... Those are the only Telltale games we played, was the Batman ones, but we thought they were both so good.
I heard the Fable one was really good. I heard the Borderlands one was good. People love the Walking Dead
ones. Yeah, that's, like, even more popular than the Batman ones, I think.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of surprised we haven't played those.
I've never heard anybody say, this was a bad Telltale game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I thought they were... But again... It's all about how you manage it. You know,
did they make the Game of Thrones ones, or was that still coming?
I think that was one that they were going to do.
Okay.
But it's all in how you manage it. I mean, there's no... Given how successful and popular the games were, there's no reason this had to happen. But someone was mismanaging the financing and the budgeting and everything else.
Well, it's a not uncommon corporate model nowadays, yeah, of essentially hubris. And it is one of the many factors why we all hopefully... claim, I mean, we're pissing in the wind, but we all like to hopefully think we're in late stages of capitalism, because fuck ups like this are happening. But we'll see. We're probably heading for cyberpunk type dystopia, so.
Okay, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Still, wearing mirrored shades stuck in your face will look pretty cool.
Stuck there.
Yeah. No.
Can't take them off.
No. You haven't read any good cyberpunk. Go back to
I really William, haven't. I know William Gibson. William Gibson, I know, yeah. I should. I really should. I mean, that's something people have told me since college, and I just never got around to doing
Johnny
it.
Johnny Mnemonic, the actual short story, not the very bad film, is pretty decent, and I only realized years later, features a character who later shows up in Neuromancer and in the Sprawl trilogy, and is one of the cooler characters in there. And yeah, she starts as a character in Johnny Mnemonic.
Hmm. It's kind of surprising those books haven't been made into like more movies or really popular movies.
Yeah, I mean they may now. I think a lot of it has been the difficulty of doing that.
But see, doing it now, would it have things like The Matrix and stuff sort of stole their thunder or
a bit more in Altered Carbon. Yeah. They're still classic. And I mean, and he wrote a lot of other stuff too, and I've read some of the other things too. The Bridge trilogy is pretty good. But I mean, they're even working on that. They're only just now trying to get Neal Stephenson stuff done. Snow Crash, Diamond Age, things like that. People are finally sort of working on that. I'm pissed. I once again came up with a fiction book that you would love, but I can't recommend you fiction books. I was just recently looking at one that I had read a long time ago. It's an old Zelazny book from like the 60s that's at its heart is essentially a far future sci-fi story that's basically a version of how Buddhism started. Mm. But this is set centuries in the future where the gods are actually these just hyper-technologized people. And I read it years ago, and something recently put it back into my face, and it's really good.
Okay.
I think you would really like it, except you don't read fiction, and if you tried to read this one, it would take you...
I do read fiction
12
sometimes.
Years per page.
I do read fiction. One thing that I think I might read this before the end of the year, I was going to read Frankenstein last year around this time of year, and I didn't get to it because I was too busy reading a whole bunch of other stuff. So I think I'm going to reread Frankenstein.
Trish and I have both decided we want to read Frankenstein. We may read it to each other. I'm not sure.
I'm going to reread that, but I'm thinking of getting my hands on English translation of Phantom of the Opera because I think I'd really enjoy it. But I don't know if I'm going to manage that or not.
Okay, but you don't read any fiction done after 1950.
The thing is, I really do like Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke, and you know, I've read some Heinlein and stuff. So, I mean, a lot of their stuff is like you said, before 1950 or at least before 1960.
Yeah.
So I have read things after that period of time and not really liked them very much. So yeah. I don't know.
Well, Zelazny's one of their contemporaries, so you might like it.
I might like it. It's hard to say.
All right. We're out of time. Go home. Get away from him. All right. If you'd like to tell us what books you wish William would read, but he won't, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Also, if you have any theories about how to stop the inevitable destined violent collapse of my boss's job when I inevitably give her poor advice, also go to the blog and talk. Also, what are your thoughts on cacti? Also, have you actively and consciously, successfully disengage from gift giving without any awkwardness? Have you done it gracefully?
Yeah, I'd like to know that too.
Beth would like to know this. And I feel like that's a useful piece of information if you've got that. So
sure.
So go there and tell us. And just in general, go there and complain about us or whatever else you want, you know? Laugh with the rest of us about how far behind Mark is, you know? Whatever's fun. All right, and then we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.